When the so-called Islamic State occupied the Iraqi city of Tikrit last summer, it was a disaster without precedent in the city's modern history. So writes Zayd al-Ali in the New York Review of Books. Worst yet, the city fell in moments, literally the time it takes for an afternoon nap, as one Tikriti told al-Ali. And though Iraqi forces, backed by U.S. warplanes, finally retook the city earlier this year, Tikrit is a hollow shell now. Al-Ali says you can almost hear the rebuke ringing across the dusty, empty streets that nothing has really changed. ISIS can run rampant again in Iraq. So how can that be avoided? Well, Zayd al-Ali joins us from Cairo. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, I wonder if you could describe to us, if I were to be standing on a street in Tikrit today, what would I see?
Well, today Tikrit is a ghost town. Aside from a small number of armed groups who are still roaming around the town and some security services. So there aren't any civilians that are left in the city. Everyone's gone.
I mean, it's stunning to hear that because Tikrit has long been a major and important city in Iraq. And even after its supposed liberation from ISIS, you're saying that hundreds of thousands of civilians, you know, who may have been living there for generations, still do not feel safe to return?
To this day, basically no one has gone back to the town. The original population is around about 200,000 people. At this stage, of those original 200,000 people, there are probably just a few hundred left.
Excuse me, you're saying there's basically just a few hundred people in all of Tikrit?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And that's not including the irregular fighters and, you know, a few police officers that are here and there and so on and so forth, a few pockets of people. And then if you were managed to get into the city, then there's no security force to keep you safe in your home. And then finally, even if you were safe in your home, there would be nothing for you to eat and nothing to drink, and there's no electricity.
I mean, so let's take a step back here. You also write, in retrospect, there was evidence of ISIS's campaign to take Tikrit several years, you know, prior to the event actually happening. I mean, you write about, for example, local business owners who began to get extorted by ISIS.
Yeah, that was going on for years, at least since 2011. And every time I would go, you know, we would stop at restaurants, we would go to shops and so on and so forth. And everyone I spoke to always told me that they were forced to pay extortion money to ISIS. There would be restaurants and I would ask, you know, is this restaurant safe? Can we sit here? Will it not be blown up? And the answer would invariably be, yes, don't worry, these people pay. And the reason why they could do so is because the police force and the security services were all infiltrated by spies. So you couldn't complain to the police. You couldn't ask for any assistance from anyone, because if you did, then you would likely be killed. And then also the campaign wasn't just money. It wasn't just extortion. They had been targeting, ISIS had been targeting security forces in the city and people from the justice sector for years. And they would leave bombs in front of their homes. They would target them with car bombs, so on and so forth. And what that means is that by the time ISIS pushed into the city in June 2014, the security sector in the city was basically on its knees.
Because you open your piece in the New York Review of Books with exactly this fact that on June 11th, 2014, a contingent of just 30 militants in seven vehicles had seized control of Tikrit. You know, in the time it took a man who you call Mahmoud, in the time it took him to have his nap. I mean, on this day when this happened, coverage in the rest of the world, at first blush, it made it seem as if the ISIS army had descended into Tikrit. And yet, no, here we are finding out that just 30 militants managed to seize control of the city.
The reason why they were able to seize control is because there was practically no one left to defend it. They drove in on the around about noon on June 11th. Completely unimpeded. Not a single shot was fired in response because all the senior security establishment had left. There was no one left to give instructions, to defend the city, to do anything. And by that time, everyone just assumed that the state had just completely collapsed. And the response from Baghdad was silence. They barely acknowledged that the problem existed at the time. It was Baghdad was so out of control at the time. They were so confused that they weren't able to react in time.
Zayd, may I ask you, I mean, there are just a catalog of horrors that the Tikritis experienced when ISIS came in. I mean, this must have been the most awful irony, if that's an appropriate word to use, because, I mean, Tikrit had escaped the worst of Iraq's recent conflicts, as you write. And it was also a former Ba'athist stronghold. And the Ba'athists, of course, were never friends of Islamic radicals. And yet here ISIS was transforming daily life for the average Tikriti in terrible ways.
Yeah, so they when they took over the city, the first thing that they did is that they closed all the courts and closed the law school and dismissed all the lawyers and said that the first thing that happens now, our first decision, is that all judges and all lawyers and anyone who worked for the judicial sector has to repent. And then over time, even what people found is that even if you did repent, that wasn't enough. And then if you had any contact with the security services, with Baghdad security services, you would be suspected constantly of providing Baghdad with information. One individual whose house I've been near many times had four sons who were in the security services, and all four of them were executed. And he eventually just decided that he couldn't take it anymore. So he picked up his own rifle and entered an ISIS safe house and killed seven people, seven ISIS fighters, before he was killed himself.
Now, the offensive to liberate Tikrit was launched in March 2015, so not that long ago.
Yeah.
Why did it take so long?
Well, for different reasons. So one reason why was because the Iraqi security services had basically almost collapsed in the weeks and months following ISIS push in from Syria. And then also there was a strong political struggle that was going on about who would take over the who would control government. Would Maliki stay on or would it be someone else? So over time, Baghdad tried to improve its messaging and improve its organization and structure. And the idea was that the campaign to liberate Tikrit would be a different type of campaign. It would be a showcase for what Baghdad, after it got its act back together, what it could do and what it was capable of in terms of defeating ISIS and allowing for civilian life to return. But what ended up happening is that the government completely failed at securing the city afterwards. So it's been weeks now, and no one really knows who controls the city today.
Zaid, I have to ask. I mean, we're calling it the campaign to liberate Tikrit, but do the Tikritis feel liberated if they cannot even return to their city?
In the few days leading up to the defeat of ISIS, right? So this is beginning of April 2015. So on those last few days when ISIS was just crumbling in Tikrit, Tikritis were elated, right? And then the rhetoric had completely changed. I know a lot of people whose homes were destroyed well after ISIS was defeated in the city. You know, there's a specific individual I know whose name is Hussein. You know, Hussein, his father died when he was very young, and he had to work his whole life in a garage to put his younger siblings through school and university, so on and so forth. And all he owned in his life was his home. That's all he had, right? Then around about 10 days after the city was liberated, the house was blown up, right? The fact that the homes were destroyed well after the fighting ended is really very problematic and difficult for people to understand. There may be a good explanation, but no explanation has been forthcoming at all from the government.
So if I may just return to how you ended your piece here. You write that though ISIS may be uprooted for now, the circumstances that allowed its takeover, decrepit and corrupt security administration, the failure to uphold the rule of law, all those circumstances still exist today. Which is one of the reasons why you write that ISIS's 9-month occupation of Tikrit, as we've mentioned, was a disaster without precedent in the city's modern history. So with that in mind, and hearing what you just told us about Hussein, I mean, you know, if we were to ask him, what lessons do you think Tikrit holds for both Iraq and the international community, what might he say?
Well, I don't know what Hussein would say specifically, but you know, I mean, last time I spoke to him, he was very, very upset. So it was difficult to get anything coherent out of him at the time.
So what would you say?
I mean, what I would say is that if anyone wants to have any reasonable hope of securing Iraq and turning it to a place where people can live relatively safely, and for it to be a place that isn't crawling with terrorists, so on and so forth, you have to develop the security sector. You have to develop the justice sector, right? It can't be the case that terrorists can roam free for years with complete impunity And yet nothing is done to resolve this problem. There's so much as attention is put into who the minister of defense will be and what his religion will be, but no attention is put into whether or not that person is properly qualified to do the job. We just don't hear anything that's convincing at all. If ISIS is defeated and pushed back into Syria or eliminated altogether, we're still not going to be at a blank page. And there are smuggling networks, there are terrorist networks, there are criminal networks that are crawling all over the country. And something needs to be done to defeat those things. These criminal elements need to be routed out by a competent and just and equitable justice sector and security services. And nothing has been being done to resolve that over the short, medium, or long term.
Zayd al-Ali is author of The Struggle for Iraq's Future, How Corruption, Incompetence, and Sectarianism Have Undermined Democracy. His latest piece on the fall of Tikrit appears in the New York Review of Books. Zayd, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.